Blog Talk Radio.
Start. It's good to have you with us, Masonic Effects. Here I am, sitting on the precipice of spring, enjoying every bit of it. It's one of the advantages of getting a little older. You get to pay attention without feeling that you're missing out on the joke. Huh? You get to notice things that you never noticed before, things that you once taken for granted can have remarkable, stimulating meaning. It's the benefits of that honesty that comes as you get older. You know, not the kind that's mean. And we see that with some old men. We also see old men forget. We're a species here. We're old. And remember, if the things that we mocked in our youth as I grew up, aren't making anyone laugh anymore. Stay up, work late and early start and cram entertainment and everything into a very tight schedule, more and more and more and more. And with our little children, the summer vacation, if you talk to children, they face it with dread. Not that joyous time away, or that break where you can stretch out and go for those long hikes and that swim and stay up a little later and look at the stars and all those kinds of adventures, but pack them full of activities, a string of uninterrupted camps, exhausting for little kids. But as long as parents are trying to orchestrate the childhood they never had, it's going to continue. Poor little kids, eh? And then that's not exactly a good way to prepare people for what's coming next, all the duties and things. But nevertheless, it goes on. And along the way, though, the stuff that we mock the most, just being able to sleep well. Today we know about it. We know that the best athletes, we're talking about what are we looking at? And I'm not talking about the professionals. They're a breed all to themselves, I think. But the Olympic athletes sleep a remarkable amount of time, remarkable, 12, 14, 16 hours, just remarkable, because you need energy to have those bursts to perform. You need to optimize. So, of course, you want to restore all the little cells, don't you? But for those of us who aren't in training, we don't have a team around us, we can only sit back and learn. We know that when people get very, very sleep deprived, that they lose certain quality. Their behaviors change. And one of the things I'll leave you with is that people lose the tendency, lose empathy. And that's where it comes to come full circle. You know, the truth of the old man, if you, without empathy, comes across as a meanness. And often I looked at it and thought, my goodness, that's, you know, what happens to the personality, but not at all personality. This is those aches and pains that catch up and you have broken sleep and you're sleeping just a few hours. So be generous with yourself, brethren. If that's the case, you find yourself with this just, you know, unpleasant irritation. Remember, you're listening to yourself all the time. You're no treat for the people around you, of course. Just to tolerate you because you're mean, that's like a hell of a way to be remembered in life, if you don't mind me saying so. Who'd want to be around you? But around us, to be look at these people as a bit more sympathetically, there's a good likelihood, probability, that they're sleep deprived. And it's been so long, it's chronic, and they have a diminished sense of empathy. Ah, doesn't that just make the penny fall? Eh? It's we have explanation, and that's where I think our ethics. Our sense of ethic and values comes into it. How much of this, how much behavior can I reduce to understanding this menacing behavior, this criminal behavior is the product of a person that has led a life of degradation and so is a product. Well, there is a point. How do we help that? How do we recover all of that potential? Well, it's not an easy thing. Do we punish it? Well, that's what we like to do. That's bad. Well, we know that's bad. What we haven't done is applied what we know about fixing it. Oh, there you go. You start fixing things. Mm-hmm. You start looking at Freemasonry altogether different, don't you? Yep. It's we have it as a, put it out there. This is I will. It's a search for the good life. Well, maybe we're looking for that. I don't think we're looking for that fountain of youth, but you know, we could present when we're looking at the good life. You take a look at a picture of us. We ought to be showing the world that as we get older, it's not decline. It's not decline, and no, we don't have to laugh self-consciously about it to distract. We know full well a good life comes not by accident, not by accident. The to be able to sort out our thinking, we can do that ourselves. And you know, a lot of people, the will of ego is very, very strong in some cultures and some families. It's encouraged, wildly encouraged, especially for the entitlement of little male creatures. But for the more enlightened that are probably in this audience listening to us today from around the world, it's a challenge to find guidelines. Oh, I know we're looking at the effects of propaganda machines and manipulation of information, but that's in some way it's always been going on, always. Now, the awareness of it, well, that's, you know, reach out for your smartphone and look at what's trending, and you'll find that there's an awareness. What's going on? And we have all of our those people telling us that what they say happens to be accurate, and they have no malevolent intentions. No, wouldn't think of putting a thumb on the scale at all. Nope. In fact, it's done all the time. It's done, and it's done with unrelenting effort. That there's a limit to rhetoric. There is. It can become overbearing and can become controlling and manipulative. Yep, we know that. Letting ethics, isn't it so inconvenient having a sense of ethics? Because we're going to probably be pouty if that's our nature, or we're going to be very clear-eyed. I hope that people that tune this in are of that latter variety, clear-eyed, clear-minded. You make you what you do with it is perfectly fine, but you know, be real, keep it real, because that's all that we have at the end of the day, isn't it? Yep. What's happening right now around us? We have the memories; we can cling to those, and I can manipulate the memories, as Dr. McMillan, Margaret McMillan, has taught us. The historian, well-known historian, I've mentioned many times on the program, history can be manipulated and often is. We even see it going on right now. World leaders will constantly manipulate history to serve a different purpose, to serve their purpose. Here we are looking at things unvarnished, because we don't need somebody curating existence for us. I like the playlist. You know, somebody's picking out the music, thinking that they can, help me along or enhance a particular mood. And yeah, it's not rocket science. That's easier stuff. But they can't account, never can account for emerging tastes. We seem to like. At the end of the day, we like the harmony that comes. If you have to dominate and scorch the earth to get there, yeah, doesn't make any sense. It's wrong by every measure. But at the end of it, there's this idea of the calm, that everything is right because you've imposed certain values on the world. Your values, or my values, or I've accumulated, and the cost of accumulation doesn't matter. So the only thing that matters is history and who won. Oh my! If only the world were so simple. Those battles are being fought all around us, but the damn community is starting to speak in a universal language. Oh my, how did that ever happen? You can't keep these despots going if their folks are going to talk the common language. Jeez, there's even common music that's coming. It's happening around us. It's the good life. Well, we're always thinking the fanciful, are we thinking about something fanciful and frivolous? Is that what our notion is of a good life? Or are we thinking of a world where we have some response to disease, some treatable, we're able to treat more disease, that we're able to reduce poverty without blaming the poor for our allowing our dominance, our economic dominance, sharing the wealth, so that we remove the degradation of poverty, the hunger, and we know what that does to successive generations of people. Genetically, we know what that does, The good life seems to have left us in some ways, standing in a storm, with this banner. Thinking that and encouraging people to reason. It's not fun. It's not, doesn't have any sex appeal. It's not going to sell a model of the car. It's knowing what we're pitching to the world is those questions we want to ask that ratty looking little boy. What's on his mind? What's it, what excites him? What's he got? What kind of treasures has he stuffed in his pocket this morning? Huh? Does he have a secret fort? Does he have a place that he likes to go? What about his mates? I know if it, only all of our children had these opportunities, and I know they don't. No. And I know that there is evil in the world, and I know that it's not dominant, but I know that it exists, and I know that we are attempting to make the world, make ourselves a better place, and we're attempting to live a modest life, and we're going to be soundly criticized for that. I long ago realized that when those times when you're just so enthusiastic and about everything Masonic, that was me. I know it's not you. You were much more well-balanced. But me, I was, I did go through that period where it was the fascination, wasn't it? Oh, everywhere you looked, there was something fascinating going on. The reality gradually caught up good. I'm glad to hear that. But you learn that overcoming people's sense of apprehension and hesitance is not something that occurs because you tell them, you can trust me. Oh, this is reliable. Nope. That's treating the world as if it's naive. But we have an opportunity to earn it. Oh, we might be driven by, a benign sense of wanting to be respected, but I think it's more practical that we're behaving and living a just life because we know the difference. We know the difference. We don't need it. We have a law. We've codified it because we're not the necessarily the dominant group. There are people that need to be told, need to be subjected to the laws of the land. You live in these cultures, and we have all of the advantages of those cultures, or many of them, and it's an obligation that we also accept the laws of the land. Not that they're going to make us necessarily happy, or that they're all going to be understood. But it is the symmetry. It is that balance that comes, the obligations that come with the advantage. A price, you could say, it's a price you pay. We've worked darn hard for it. We give up things to accomplish these things. We give up. We suspend a bit of our involvement. We trust people, and when they fail to value that trust, then we take corrective action, and we do get a result. Eventually we do. We're persistent, unrelenting. We are. We can postpone, we can put a pin in it, as the wags would say. But it will always come back to haunt us, and we will eventually deal with it. And we're getting better at that. There's just, you wake up and you think, oh my goodness, what's the priority? There's so many of them going on. Well, That's the way life is. It's important. It's an obligation. It's important to be well-informed. And that it enriches the experience of listening and being in your presence. You bring informed opinion to the conversation. And still, you and I between us don't have that sense. We don't have any prerogative over right and wrong. We can't predict the stock markets or the outcome of the horse race, no. But we can, to the best of our ability, assert observations, use the observations, and we can be also thinking not only about our own well-being, because that's important, but the well-being of somebody less fortunate. I don't know if we do that as an aesthete. Some people do, and fair play to them, yeah. But we also have some very, very large institutions, with very far-reaching impact. You think of our economics or our finances, things that are incredibly important. And I won't get into that, however tempting it might be with what's happening in the world today, but that in the background I'm seeing that, you know, this whole weird little toss-away term, this global community, has caught the imagination of a lot of people. So whether folks are fluent in this kind of language or fluent, we see the struggle for access to education happening. Isn't that beautiful? We don't want to give credit if those unpleasant, those people that are living a different kind of a style of life with preserving their own sense of what's good and going about their business. We don't want to acknowledge their successes too much because, my goodness, we cannot. We have to stay broken because otherwise we start to look at our successes, our challenges, our solutions. And that's been happening for a long, long time. Yeah, it has. I like to think it's so beautifully imaginative that Freemasonry is that conversation starter, but not for everybody. You know, I mean, I haven't lost my mind. Just the idea that there is we can define a brotherhood with these world values. It's as if, oh my goodness, everybody's going to speak Esperanza, you know, those guaranteed basic income. Well, we're going to do that, you know. We're the bunch that are going to strive to do that because we can't. We're not good at tolerating the suffering that goes along. We're not good at that. No. Yeah, we can look at living a good life and respecting and appreciating what we have, but we can also look for ways to be more inclusive. Always, that never changes. So if we're going to punish the person that was never taught, that might make us feel that we're doing something and we can justify it. But when we look at the outcomes, we think, well, if we do that, we keep punishing people. And the outcomes seem to be getting worse. Ought we not to change the input? Ought we not to rethink? And wonder whether there's a better approach? Yeah. As soon as we start to think that way, my goodness, imagine. It's like asking, is there a better alternative to, producing so much hydrocarbon? As soon as you do that kind of thinking, you think, yeah, well, it's far off. Oh, there's lots of complications, you know, that the mind will go to. There's a lot of folks that will rest when you're talking about these ideas, will create the barriers. For first, they can't form the idea or swallow the idea without thinking about all the barriers. Yeah. And that happens. there's barriers to anything, but if you let them stop you, what happens? You're doing nothing. It's like, so what? It's going to take a long time, but a good idea. Now we're going electric, I hear, and we're going to need, it's going to mean a tremendous upsurge in the production, if you will, of energy or reallocation of energy. And maybe I'll be talking to you with a small nuclear reactor generating all the energy I need for my house and car. Who's to say? But it's fascinating. It's fascinating what's coming. Just beautiful. Anyway, what's coming? I can tell you what's coming here. Masonry and the good life, that struggle. We better have a sense of humor if we're going to tackle this one, gentlemen. You take off the rose-colored glasses pretty damn fast and see things as they are. This is, we struggle. So you struggle and you're all huffy and puffy, and then we sit down and have a cup of tea. What are you reading? What are you politicians doing over here? What are you... How do you guys take care of your old folks? You know, what's the educational system? Is it coming along? What are you doing about this matter of inequality of women? Oh, well, put a pin in that. Listen, if you have a going all millennial, Gen X on you here. Hello. Hello, Turkey. Hello, Iran. Hello, Netherlands. Hello, Germany. Hello. I'm going to forget. I'll come back and say hi to a lot. Hi, Ireland. UK and Australia. Here's something that'll bring us together, all galactic. Benny Carter. Yeah, it's from a tune he did in 1966 in London. It's alive. Yeah. Thank you. Can you imagine? Benny, don't you have to practice the sax? Oh, come on, Mom. I want to go and play baseball. After you practice the sax, Benny. That was Benny Carter. Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Carter, for encouraging that young fellow. Ah, we were once highborn, hey? That's us. You were once highborn. Thank goodness. As if we had a choice. What else could have launched something with such? I think we can agree the trajectory of masonry has been just utterly amazing. Just utterly amazing. If not, you know, if only it satisfied our little absolutist minds. This is absolutely the way it is. And a bunch of old stern men are leaning over to tell you that's the way you should be. So you ought to think, well, it's streaming into something quite dignified. It's a challenge that we need to take on willingly. It's like, remember, you want to be part of this beautiful music that we create and this is a very, very large, it's a symphony that we're performing here, and I think there are 126 musicians here. And what instrument do you bring? And we'll audition, and good luck with it. I hope it does well. Hope you go well. But all of that aside, it's like, thank you, Mrs. Carter. There's your son has a chair in this on this stage with us and is contributing, and you want to beat your little drum or blow your horn very loud so everybody pays attention to you. That's just amazing. That's not what we're doing. No, the harmony, the beauty is pulling it all together. Have you felt that? Mm-hmm. You haven't? Mm-hmm. Oh, so prima donna, entitlement. Yeah, that's it. Want to be first on the beat, or are you the one that's a microsecond fast? Not for long in this orchestra. Not for long. Go over there. It's like the children's orchestra. We really just applaud them because they're just putting out there and they're trying. They're blowing their little lungs out to get that note. And it wobbles all over the place. But when you're little, it's great that you tried. And look, you sat there with all of your classmates and that was an orchestra. Wonderful. And we'll applaud you wildly for it. And we'll also take you to the symphony when you're of an age. Where you can even bring your instrument and we'll put it under the seat, you know, just tuck it in under the seat with us. But listen, listen, you'd hear, just you hear when the violin, it's just a difference, isn't it? Yours I love, my goodness, yes. Yours, and I appreciate the practice and your effort, but isn't it so beautiful? You actually practice a beautiful instrument. Or when you sit down at the keyboard, it's just exceptional. Do you mind if we listen to him? This fellow, this is Yo-Yo Ma. He seems to do something with the music, isn't it? This is that Canadian that did Bach. Oh, no, they don't call it covering Bach. It's like cover songs. Gould was his name. Just listen to what he has some kind of intimacy going on with the music. It's very strange. Yeah. But why don't we sit down and just listen and see what he was up to? Here, we were once highborn. We're not those people. We're not the lions of it wasn't English society. These were people that, this was London we're talking about, the city of London. You know, separate country, separate laws, separate governance. You know, the one that the queen needs to ask permission to enter. Yeah, that one. Yeah. We know it's not where we know our place. We know that symmetry. We know that exchange. We are part of something quite remarkable. If you told me Wolfgang Mozart was a Freemason, I pay a different attention to his music. But telling me a manufactured celebrity was a Mason doesn't much matter at all. I'm not made different because of the achievements of another person, to be honest with you. If I'm inspired by their work, then that's about being receptive. Perhaps it is the story of Chopin or Dvorak or Pushkin or Byron. Did I care that Alan Turing was gay and publicly humiliated in spite of his contributions? What makes a man a Freemason is, I think, knowing the difference between what is popular and what is ethical. If we kept silent in spite of his contributions, what makes a man a Freemason is knowing the difference between what is popular and what is ethical. If we kept silent about who had been a member, it would underline the significance you and I and all of our meagerness bring to the occasion. Which one of them was a true Mason? Washington took one degree or attended what? Did anyone harp at Churchill or Prince of Wales for poor attendance or failing to visit? So being on the level must have some qualifiers attached. And the precepts of the order aren't as absolute as Newtonian mechanics or Platonic shapes. It is easier to describe what we aren't, rather than to define what it is we are and what we do. If we do the work, if we find satisfaction in it, if we penetrate our opinions with these expansive ideas, who is to say if our character will be improved? Who is to say if the world will be a better place? You are. You are the honest man who understands how precarious life can be and how doing it right has nothing to do with the outer man and everything to do with character. Smiling for no apparent reason makes a person feel better and has a very lovely effect on most everyone who comes in contact. We're built that way. We're built with an ability to rationalize what we want to rationalize. And out of that wreckage, we have an ability to solve problems. Let that be the lesson. We have more ability than we acknowledge, and we can't lean toward that potential without applying action. Fascinating. Oh, we're not born of the sons of kings, the landed gentry. But that's not the emphasis. And if we've made it the emphasis, then we've imposed an error on the thinking about masonry. We were. We've always been high-minded in the effort to improve, to appreciate, to savor the moments. That's perhaps the greatness of it all, huh? Thelonious Monk helps us with that. Mm-hmm. Why Thelonious Monk has such a following is no surprise to listen to it. It's almost like he's telling stories with the music, if you think about it. If you think about it. I'm grateful, in a way, that Masonry found fertile ground in the period of Enlightenment, and there was some spillover effect. The attention to detail, and I guess it's odd when the son of generations of farmers and boat builders finds that he's reminded, as he's walking, he's reminded of a scene in an opera or a line of poetry. And there's nobody around and nobody looking, and it's just because. You can appreciate the fine things in life. Not because somebody is ordering you, but because you have access. It wasn't always the case. Even the music, my goodness, that was, we might hear a drum, we might hear a lute, we might hear a flute or a recorder, but it's, violin and cello and viola, you had to be quite well off or maybe a servant in the room to hear that kind of joy. Yeah, we have access, so we need to take advantage. Here, the detail, the poetry, all of a sudden, it's you know, it's hard. It's like realizing there was a time when English was written when spelling hadn't been codified, and in the same passages you can see the same word written three or four different ways. And really, to be honest, even at time before punctuation, you think, well, these are conventions that everybody always had. Well, no. And there are conventions that have made life easier, except the paradox of learning English. Thank goodness I was born to it. And in the background, a bit of Gaelic, yeah. The attention to detail. Well, the rush to work for somebody, you know, to optimize the productivity, to get extract as much profit, because I was a unit, a costly unit. I could walk around with that sociological notion of structure, yeah, when I think that way. But I can also look at the some remarkable advantages, the attention to detail and the learning to apply critical thinking. Whew, amazing. This is what these guys do. This is William Wordsworth. You know, you could have dinner with anybody in through history, who would you have? I might put William Wordsworth on that list. Interesting guy with interesting friends, you know? Just to find out, just to listen and talk to him over a nice meal. And, oh, of course, a bit of beef would be nice. Thank you very much. And a pint, thanks. Just to ask him about the influences of his work. English, one of the leading English poets, English romanticism, and with his buddies, Robert Southey and Samuel Taylor Coleridge, you know, not at all shabby. Not at all shabby. What was on your mind, boys? This is I was looking out, I'm seeing where I am right now is covered in white. It's snow. Yeah. I can see my car covered with about, you know, 10 centimeters, you know, yeah. And I need, you know, I just wanted, and this is what I was talking about a little earlier. Here I am reflecting and thinking, oh, wouldn't that be nice? And what came to mind was Wordsworth. I know. Wordsworth's poem, I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud. I know, I'm ashamed. There's no defense. I'm ashamed to be influenced by something so beautiful. This poem, seriously. He says that wandering like a cloud floating over the hills and valleys, he encountered a field of daffodils beside a lake, and they were dancing in the breeze, you know, fluttering flowers. He said they stretched endlessly along the shore. You can imagine, close your eyes and imagine that. And though the waves of the lake danced beside the flowers, the daffodils outdid it. You know, it was just this beautiful scene, but it was these beautiful daffodils. I know what color they were. They're yellow. The speaker says that a poet in this poem, the poet couldn't help but be happy in such a joyful company. They're happy little, you know, they're bouncing along in the colors and then reflecting the light. But now, whenever he feels vacant or pensive, the memory flashes upon that inward eye. That is the bliss of solitude. As we hear, this is the six-line stanzas, there's four of them. It's a simple poem, one of the loveliest and most famous that Wordsworth wrote. And he visits familiar subjects of nature and memory. Yeah, there's like it's like a simple eloquence. Yeah. I wandered, and I'm laughing because it's exactly what I wanted to do. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high or vales and hills. Sip your Barolo here, you know, when all at once, I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils beside the lake beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze. Continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, they stretched a never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 I saw at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves. Just simply, a poet could not but be gay. In such a jocund company, I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye. Which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils. It's almost as if he knew how, if he was prescient. And we know that being distracted serves a purpose, you know, reflecting and contemplating serves a purpose. You know, it's regenerative. Apparently William did as well. No accounting for taste, eh, gentlemen? Thank you. I guess if we were going to begin an order of with some exceptional statements and to support it, we would be looking for exceptional people. We wouldn't be looking at the run-of-the-mill, the mainstream, because we would be looking for people that exhibited some uniqueness, an uniqueness of thought and of function, and a sense of awareness and appreciation of the fellow kind. Something to think about that explains a lot about the order. Lourdes, we're going to get into that today. How my goodness, how did certain ideas, you're going to be asked to reflect on how certain ideas, particularly this idea about constitution, came to the Netherlands. Although I think my recollection was back to the 14th century, where we saw the first efforts in the Netherlands of a non-government body pressing to create constitutional authority. Oh, and it was widely contested at the time. But here, this part of history, we're looking at the introduction of a fellow named John Tolan. And he was an unofficial emissary, an English free thinker with Republican inclinations. Oh, my. Ever since the revolution of 1688-89 and the crowning of the Dutch stadtholder William of Orange, in British interests in the continent saw the Low Countries as critical. And to preserve that interest, various agents and spies had represented one ministry or another with members of the Whig Party, particularly drawn from its radical and deeply anti-French fringe, were often recruited or self-appointed to the task of preserving and strengthening the alliance. We're going to go down there because it's plenty good for business. Yeah. And that's where John Tolan fits in. He and his group came. The kind of a continental story of Freemasonry starts to get both complicated and intriguing. He was extraordinary, as he was controversial, and we should reflect on that. I think I'm going to do something about that, about Aleister Crowley and that whole notion of extraordinary and controversial. Tolan was one of the most said heretical thinkers of his age, and although erratic, he established quite a reputation in his time, well beyond. And in the Dutch Republic, a gossipy and somewhat outrageous journal of the period made reference to him as if he were a household name. Tolan left behind in his papers a curious document, handwritten in French and dated The Hague, 1710. Mercifully, it's signed. Quite simply, it's a two-page meeting record of an order that called itself the Knights of Jubilation. That order, clearly libertine and playful, also possessed traits of constitutions, meaning the statutes and rules of our order, called its members brothers, and was headed by a grand master. And these are most unusual terms to be found together in 1710 in any language, but especially in French, and not least in The Hague, among a group of men, the majority of whom were French Huguenot refugees, Protestants. Huh? The use of the term constitutions, although written in French, was intended in this context to carry the British meaning of rules for an organization. The document was written in the hand of one of the refugees and signers, Prosper Marchand. Clearly he and his brothers, as they called themselves, had learned a new meaning for constitutions since To the best of our knowledge, none of them had ever been to England. How then did they learn that meaning? Other letters from members of this group have been preserved in Dutch libraries, and these indicate that they also belonged to another little club, or at least some of them did, and guarded what is called the secret. As this linguistic plot thickens, keep in mind that the earliest translations of Lodge into French used the words l'odeur and société. Manuscripts like the one Tolan left behind in his papers turn up only rarely in historical research. They are rare because they contradict an accepted storyline. They are anomalous. They do not fit anywhere, and not surprisingly, they become the subject of historical controversy. So when Jacobs, the historian who wrote this material, researched it, first published the manuscript some years ago as an appendix to the Radical Enlightenment that she wrote in 1981, she argued that Freemasonry offered the best explanation of what was going on at the meeting held by the Knights. A few historians disagreed. Others just did not know what to do with the problem. Still others agreed. Without dwelling unduly on all the arguments, we summarize what can now best be said about the meaning of Tolan's private record keeping. Doesn't matter. We have some remarkable work going on doing the same kind of detailed thread counting about the way that Masonry came to Canada and to Upper Canada. And oddly enough, there's some inconvenient questions that are coming up. Well, oh my, who would have thought? Yeah, that's Earl Hines. We'll come back to Earl. Beautiful music. Beautiful. And we're taking a swipe at history, and we'll come back to it next week. The influence, the argument here is that this fellow, this heretical guy, John Tolan, in the Netherlands, was bringing influences, bringing a language to a group that could only, the argument is that it could only have come from Masonic sources just because of the combination, the way it was combined. But we're talking 1710 here. Oh, remember 1717? the creation of oxygen in the world, yeah, all of that. So what's up here, boys and girls? Are we suggesting that Masonry was well established and operating with constitution before 1717? That's exactly what's going on. A little bit of an eye opener, so we can, you know, happily declare and shallow and be quite shallow about it that everything started in 1717. Unless you've ever visited the Grand Lodge of Scotland. The eye opener. Do you want the truth or do you just want a pretty story? I hope the pretty story is going to end here. I hope you've enjoyed the program today. I hope you've it's been valuable and it's been a bit of an asset to in this often intemperate kind of world. We now need to hold ourselves strong, and we have a menace running around that we have to deal with. And yes, we are standing up, and yes, we do take this serious. It's like the father to the annoying child. Don't stop that. Don't make me get up. Now I'm getting up. Well, Papa's now up. And he's upset and he's not happy about what's going on. And of course, there's going to be a payday. So it's serious how to sort this out and remain aware and well-informed and capable of absorbing information. And I hope until you're the last day to your last breath, you are capable of doing that. And I hope that you never, ever, ever stop your thinking and begin to live with opinion. I hope that you're always calculating all of the new information, finding the fact to the best of your ability, to the best, and making decisions, ethical decisions, based on what's happening around you. The short-sighted is just to accept and just to settle for an opinion. That's all bad. There's an opinion for you. We're all good. There's another one. Life is complicated. That's the beauty of it. So it's like some people have the artistic ability to handle complicated music, but they see the simplicity in it. You do the work, you practice, you pay attention. And when you're little, you have the advantage of a mentor. They'll say, now listen to how delicious this tone, listen to the tone, to the emotion that you can draw from hitting that key on the keyboard. Now try it. Do you hear it? Once you hear it, then it's like, now you do that. Try that. Well, how do you do that? Well, how do you do it? How do I ride my bicycle? Get on the damn bicycle. Do you want to ride first? Do you want to? And then you might fall. Yeah, well, if you're going to fall and fail, don't be starting it, because that's exactly what you have to do. You have to prevail. I'm enjoying myself far too much to end this program, but I hope you'll come back next week and we'll tuck into the next part, the questions about that darn toll and what was going on. And if you're inclined to entertain some challenges, I like to think that the idea of Masonry was in the ether long before it took form. Yeah, there's an audacious little statement. Come back. Thank you very much. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. And we'll see you all real soon.
Thank you.